Did you know that Australia produced a pianist whose extraordinary musical skill put him up there with the greats compared to, well, achievements on the scale of Dame Nellie Melba, Percy Grainger, and yet very few of us have ever heard of him. Geoffrey Tozer was his name. Paul Keating was a friend and supporter whose eulogy after his death condemned the Australian arts community for the lack of support and respect.
He could not make the cut with the latter-day Melbourne and Sydney Symphony Orchestras. Their indifference and contempt towards him left him to moulder away, largely playing to himself in a rented suburban Melbourne house. The people who chose repertoire for those two orchestras and who had charge in the selection of artists during this period should hang their heads in shame at their neglect of him. If anyone needs a case example of the bitchiness and preference within the Australian arts, here you have it. This malevolence more or less broke Geoffrey's heart. After all he wished to do was to give out. In a famous interview for a Melbourne newspaper, he said, "It's a waste to have someone here like me not being used."
Paul Keating doesn't mince words there, and you can see that in a new doco, which is called The Eulogy. It's presented by the much-loved conductor and very greatly missed Richard Gill, who embarked on a quest to find out how such a tragedy happened. And he found out that Tozer's situation was very layered and complex. The director of The Eulogy, Jane Hosking, joins me now. Hi, Jane.
It's Janine, actually.
Oh, sorry, Janine.
It's okay.
Janine, you got Paul Keating to recreate the eulogy that he gave to Geoffrey Tozer. Can you tell us about their friendship?
Well, the film looks at the eulogy, and we heard that searing sort of piece from it, and I guess that was the part that was interesting to me from the beginning, because I hadn't really heard much about Geoffrey Tozer. And I read the eulogy and it was incredible, and I thought there must be a story there to follow. So the first step was to approach Paul Keating to see that if he could recreate the eulogy, because it hadn't been recorded. And in 2017, he agreed to do that. So Geoffrey died in 2009. So it was a very big commitment for Paul Keating to agree to recreate it. And we did it in St. Patrick's Cathedral. But during the process of the research, I certainly learnt quite a bit about their friendship. The friendship was, though, forged in the love of music and his deep appreciation of Geoffrey Tozer's talent.
So tell me more about their friendship. How deep did it go?
Well, I think it started, as I said, with the music. He goes to a school in Canberra where his son was at the Christmas breakup. There was a concert and there was a man playing the piano. I think it was the Hungarian Rhapsody. And he thought, my goodness, that is just mind-blowing. He went over and spoke to Geoffrey Tozer and he said, "What's a guy like you, you know, doing here?" As a part-time school teacher, he wasn't earning much money. And Tozer said that this was a part-time job that he did on the side, and that he was a concert pianist. And I think that the friendship went on with there. He listened to more of Geoffrey Tozer's music and decided, I think it was the revelation of just how underappreciated Tozer was, but also just how he was existing with hardly any money. And that inspired later on the creative fellowships. So Geoffrey Tozer was actually the inspiration of the Keating creative fellowships that helped mid-career artists, not just classical performers, but writers, actors. And that went on until Keating lost the election.
Keating was very scathing of the classical music scene in that quote that you just heard, and the final bit, if anyone wants an example of the bitchiness and preference of Australian arts, here you have it. What did he mean by that? How was Geoffrey Tozer treated here in Australia by the various arts organisations that could have employed him?
Well, as you said earlier, it's a complex thing, and I think that was one of the issues that myself and Richard Gill and the producers wanted to look at. And without a doubt, there is evidence that Geoffrey Tozer's career was going incredibly well. He was playing with the major orchestras. It started to dry up, and I guess you could track that for when Keating loses the election to Howard. The Keating fellowships dry up, and so did Geoffrey Tozer's work with the major orchestras. And I feel that Keating and other supporters of Geoffrey Tozer were saying, once you take out the possibilities of playing with the major orchestras in this country. It's like that was the thing that got Geoffrey Tozer going. Of course, he could do solo recitals, but those big event things that get true artists going were suddenly denied to him. Although overseas, for example, we show it in the film, he does the Yellow River Concerto in China to a crowd of 80 million watching on television, but also seeing him live. So this leads to the argument that he was underappreciated in this country. And I think also Richard Gill said that when he started out on the journey with us, he didn't really have an opinion about Geoffrey Tozer, except he'd heard rumours that Geoffrey had a drinking problem. He hadn't seen him perform live. So this was terrific for us because it meant that he had an open mind going into the journey. And then he goes to investigate the back catalogue of wonderful music that Geoffrey had created as a result of a record deal with Chandos Records that was actually personally negotiated by Paul Keating. And I think it's when
that's pretty amazing story. Paul Keating going to London and making a meeting with a guy who owns a record label. He went to extraordinary lengths, didn't he?
Absolutely. But I mean, we know from his past that in the early days, he was also, you know, he was a manager of a rock band.
That's
so
true.
Yeah, I think it was annoying and frustrating to him to see an artist of the level of Tozer. But Tozer was hopeless with business things. You know, he was never going to be able to pull a major record deal out. So, you know, Keating went across to London and spoke to Chandos Records, who were at that time the leading classical music independent label, and, you know, played them some Tozer. They said, look, we can't just go by a recording. We actually have to see him live, get him to play something for us. So Tozer goes over, he does that, and the result is the Mettner Concerto No. 1, beautiful, beautiful, complex piece, little known of here in Australia, but he actually scored a Grammy nomination for that.
We should hear a little bit of that because it's astounding. What a player.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? So dramatic.
So incredibly dramatic. And he, in a way, unearthed that Russian composer, Mettner, who he himself hadn't had much of the respect that perhaps he had deserved in his lifetime as well. So that's an interesting second story that happens in the documentary, The Eulogy, which has been directed by Janine Hosking. He was a child prodigy, and the film The Eulogy delves into the fact that this actually was something that contributed to his difficulty as an adult, trying to get on with life and trying to negotiate more adult concepts. He simply couldn't cope with a lot of very normal situations.
Yeah, he's a very grown-up little boy. There's some amazing archival footage, which is just an absolute treasure that we unearthed. And you're hearing him play, as the gentleman said, from the age of 10. But how he explains that he just can't relate to boys his age because they're not talking about classical music, they're not talking about Beethoven and Mozart. It's and he's got a very plummy voice, and his mother's sitting there very proudly next to him, sort of almost guiding the interview in a way. It's very telling. He was a protege of his mother more than anyone, really, and that's what the film looks at. And Richard Gill, in his role as our finest music educator, I think, that we've ever had, and the great loss of Richard, that part of the story was particularly intriguing and unsettling to Richard.
Yeah, I can imagine. Seeing Richard Gill on screen, it just made my heart skip a beat.
Yeah.
He was always just such a wonderful educator, but so engaging when it comes to talking about music. And he's been such a loss for the Australian music industry, I think, losing him in the last year. It was just lovely to see him, and because I'd spent a lot of time with him on Spicks and Specks, he came on and I think he converted a lot of people to musical styles that they hadn't even thought about before. That was his magic. It was just so nice to see him on there. Was this? Did he film this documentary before he got ill and passed away?
Yeah, we were very lucky. It was his final project, if you like, in terms of a documentary. And yeah, all of us feel so sad. But we got to the end of it. We knew that he was sick. And he was so brave during all of that, and he got to watch the film with Paul Keating. Together they watched it, and you know, they didn't always agree on everything to do with Tozer. But I think actually I've made quite a few documentaries, but I think working with Richard, you felt like it was a real collaboration, and that joy of music. I learned so much, I think, about classical music. He was a very generous person, and you know, we had the premiere for the film at the Melbourne Film Festival, and unfortunately Richard was too sick at that point to go. It's coming up to a year since he died. So I think the timing of finally the film's going to be released, I hope all those people that just loved and appreciated Richard can get to see him. And he's funny. he looks at all the stuff very seriously, and I think he has a lot of empathy and compassion too for Geoffrey Tozer.
Of course. Janine Hosking is with us, the director of The Eulogy, which explores the complicated life of pianist Geoffrey Tozer. Maureen's on the phone. Hello, Maureen.
Hi, how are you, Miss?
Good. What's your story?
Geoffrey Tozer's mother was my music teacher at school.
Oh, my goodness.
And I am 9 days older than Geoffrey Tozer was, as she used to often tell me. And while I was struggling with the violin, and she'd say, "Oh, Geoffrey plays the violin when he's relaxing from his piano practice."
Wow, he was talented on many, many levels. What was she like as a teacher?
She was an amazing woman. She was so passionate, and she used to tell us that when Geoffrey was a baby, she would play Beethoven to him, and so that right from birth, basically, he was just imbued with music. So I tried that with my son too.
Did he become a concert pianist?
No, not so much.
No, that's exactly. Maureen, thanks for your call. You mentioned earlier, Janine, that Tozer was almost a protege of his mother, and that was part of his undoing, sadly. Can you expand a bit on that? That was something Richard Gill seemed a little upset about.
Yeah, I mean, Veronica brings the mother, brings the good and the bad, I guess. The good in that music was innate in her as well. She was a very accomplished musician and, as you just heard, an incredible, inspiring teacher, but she was a tough teacher, particularly with her son. We've got some amazing photographs, and they're in the film, of this little baby by the keyboard, and a colourful personality. I think Geoffrey, the genius level that he reached was because of his mother. But where it comes into play, and I guess we're looking now back through modern lens, if you like, Richard was looking at how he was hothoused. He only really knew about life and the piano through the piano and the keyboard, so he couldn't do anything practical.
I think this example can be transferred to other fields where children are hothouse. Think about sport. Think about tennis players who have no life skills.
Yeah, I think perhaps if later on in his life he'd had a partner or a really fabulous, solid manager to do those things for him, but he was completely vulnerable to the world as he got older, and particularly with emotional relationships. So one of the factors that contributes, I think, to the downward spiral, if you like, is his inability perhaps to handle a breakup with a very significant lover in his life. So those sort of things, that maturity was missing with Geoffrey. But what you got in Bucket Loads was this amazing performer who really, really loved performing. I mean, his mother got it right with that.
I've got a question that probably is difficult to answer, but could the arts and music industry have done more for Tozer, and in fact, were they even obligated to?
I think they're obligated from a caring point of view. Actually, Mary Valentine, who she's interviewed and was involved with the orchestras at the time, she said, perhaps if we had known more, we might have helped more. I think to have a major artist clearly not playing with the orchestras, something is wrong. Something is deeply wrong. You know, Paul Keating's obviously gone the way of they should hang their heads in shame, I think is one of the really big things that he says. I think there's a lot of complexity to it, but it is a worry when it's an industry that I think it should have been more caring. I think there should have been a few more checks on how's Jeffrey going. He has contributed a lot to our industry. Where is this man? At the age of 54, he's sort of disappeared off the scene. Mm. He's struggling financially. I don't have the answer on how you can do that, but I think there was a lack of empathy.
And sadly, he died almost in poverty.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is just tragic. Was Paul Keating right, do you think? Was Jeffrey Tozer the finest pianist of the 20th century?
I wish that you were able to interview Richard Gill because he could answer you. I'm not qualified. I think I can make documentaries. I'm not qualified to say that he was the best, certainly from interviewing people that heard him play, saw him live, have gone and looked at all the records. Yes, he was. But in my personal opinion, I think he has opened up a love of classical music. For me, when I could never understand why people moved when they listened to this music. And you suddenly you are when you hear Jeffrey Tozer, and I think you want to cry, you want to feel happy, sad. All those emotions came through. I think when I was editing the film, I thought, my goodness, he's worked his magic on me.
I felt that in the film, and if people want to go and see it, it opens on October 10. It's called The Eulogy, and it's pretty amazing if you don't know the life and work of Jeffrey Tozer. It's a complicated and difficult film, but it's an extraordinary journey that you take us on. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, too.
Janine Hosking there, the director of The Eulogy.
Mick Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.